With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Since its debut in 1967, the National Football League Super Bowl has provided viewers a little diversion amidst all the tackling and running and sportsing, the halftime show. What began as wholesome, kitschy entertainments found at most college games with marching band and majorettes has since evolved into pop culture spectacles featuring megawatt musical guests that sometimes grab more headlines than the games themselves. So now, with 56 halftime shows in the history books, the great pop culture debate wants to determine what is the best Super Bowl halftime show of all time. My nipple was also accidentally exposed during a halftime show, and the FCC paid me to put it away. I'm your host, Eric Resniak. Please help me welcome this panel for this episode. Halftime might be game time, but this panelist actually enjoys the football part of the Super Bowl as much as the show. It's Andrea Guerrero.
Eric, does liking sports make me gay?
Well, Andrea, I am as straight as they come, so I would not know. Next, balls, balls, and more balls. It's our butch queen of this and every NFL season. It's Gary Jackson.
Oh, don't we all love a good trade of the season?
But you are always my first draft pick, Gary. Welcome back. And finally, our next panelist is still confused as to why there's a football game that interrupts the middle of the pop concert. It's Jake Pitticelli.
I also only recently found out that the F in NFL stands for football and not Fenty.
Oh my God, it doesn't? Bill Belichick better have my money. So, before we get to the debate, how does this work? As this is a mini-sode, there was no public poll. Our panelists went through every Super Bowl halftime show, all the way back to 1967, kids, and picked up to 12 of our favorites. We compared notes, found the consensus picks, and added them to a bracket. Now we argue about it and insult each other, all for your amusement. Want to play along at home? You can! Head to greatpopculturedebate.com and go to polls and brackets. There you'll find the downloadable listener brackets for this and every episode of our little show. Do your picks match up with ours? Do you think our taste is out of bounds? Let us know by dropping a comment on this episode at our website or by yelling at us on Twitter, Instagram, or Mastodon. Now, before we get into the top 16, I want to give our panelists a chance to talk about the halftime shows they were bummed did not make the bracket. I'm going to start with you, Andrea.
So my two major misses were Madonna, of course, because how did Madonna not make the list? Granted, it wasn't a super memorable halftime show, but it's still Madonna, so you kind of just expected her to be up there. The other one was the Blues Brothers bash, because it's so goofy and stupid, and if you love the Blues Brothers movie, it's pretty much just that condensed into a 10-minute halftime show. And I think it's at least worth talking about. It might not be worthy of the bracket, but I think everyone should watch it.
Yeah, and I think we have to acknowledge that I would say prior to 1993, which is the Michael Jackson edition, which we'll be talking about quite a bit, the halftime shows definitely had, let's just say, a different level of expectation. The ones that happened earlier before, I mean, Blues Brothers is one of them, but there were some wild ones. I think Gary might have had one in his picks, and I just think it's incredible.
Yes.
But like Carol Channing was there. A lot of
Hello,
up
Dolly.
With people. Hello, Dolly. Like they were campy. And we live for that. So I'm glad that you're giving that some credence. Thank you, Andrea. And regarding Madonna, I, as a gay man, it is against my religion to speak ill of Madonna. And I wanted to love it more than I did. I would say it's not bad. Like everybody else, we all watched it. It was not bad. It was fine. My argument was it actually felt more like a Vegas residency show than a Super Bowl halftime show. It actually felt weirdly small compared to even ones that came before it. It's just very contained. Do you know what I mean? And then I think she was trying so hard to be very of the moment with having Nicki and MIA and, oh God, what are those guys?
LMFAO.
Yeah. And it's like one of those things now you're looking at it and you're like, well, this didn't age terribly well. But it is, I mean, in terms of like a megawatt pop star doing a collection of her greatest hits, she did that. And it was solid. It just, I don't think it made the top 16. Anybody else have any thoughts on Madonna?
I think, Eric, it also might have been, or at least what I'm saying now, is that with the, since Madonna's like Super Bowl halftime show, artists are now really commanding, like, they are taking the lead on it, like their direction and more. Cause I just don't really see Madonna with that entire group of people performing. So yeah. I agree with you. I think it was a little forced and trying to be like with the times, and it just didn't, it was flat. And it did, it felt small compared to like the ones since then, I guess I would say.
And even before it, like you watch some of the ones in the early 2000s, those were very big shows. But thank you, Andrea, both excellent picks. And I especially am glad that we talked a little bit about like the kind of Blues Brothers era of Super Bowl show. Gary, talk to me about the ones that you were sad didn't make it.
So the first one that I picked was The Weeknd, or formerly known as The Weeknd. I think it's Abel. I don't know his name, but why I picked him is because his halftime was during COVID. Like, so yeah. He was really like, I think it's just a testament to his artistic side. Like, it was very, very like moody, but like just really cool. And the imagery of his face being bruised and stuff was art. It was camp. And to do that, like during COVID, and to really try to bring entertainment to such a stage, I think just giving him some kudos for that. Very goth, but so that was the first one. And then obviously, I think by the time we finally got this up and running, Rihanna, Miss Rihanna 2023, definitely would have been in the running by the time we got this list going. But have to give her a shout out. Like, Mama's pregnant. Mama did that thing. She is a brand, and the way she just marketed herself and her brand was brilliant. She was stationary, but she still was like, she was a talk of the town. And I think when the Super Bowl is way more important than the actual game itself, you know you did something right.
And yeah, I mean, how many months pregnant? She was very pregnant when she did this. And she's up there on platforms. They look like iPhones that were like going up and down. I was like, ma'am, she is with child. But she did it. And she was singing live, I think. Was she not?
She was. Also, yes, good shout out. Go ahead, Rihanna, the vocals. We see you.
Yeah. And as Gary kind of alluded to, bless the panelists on this episode who have been extremely patient, because we started working on this episode in like the beginning of 2022 and we're not recording it until the middle of 2023. So literally we started doing this before Rihanna's Super Bowl was even a thing. That's partially why I didn't end up making the top 16. So that's 100% on me. But thank you, Gary. I will also say on The Weeknd, it was a highly artistic show.
Yes.
Like, it had a point of view. It was all over the place. The part where he comes like running down the field and flashing lights. It's flashing lights, right?
Yeah.
Not blinding lights. I always get that wrong. That's a moment. Like, it is very exciting and thrilling. Like, that whole segment is really good. I think it just missed the top 16 for me personally. Anybody have any other comments on either Weeknd or Princess Riri?
Yeah, no, just to go back to the fact that she was pregnant. I mean, that fetus has already performed at the Super Bowl. Yep. And then a month later at the Oscars. What have I done? Not
exactly.
That.
What are we doing with our lives?
But right? What I love about Rihanna is, like, as you alluded to, Gary, she is a businesswoman. Fenty is a brand. Music is just her little side hobby that she does on the side when she's bored. Everybody expected her to release her next album after, and she kept on teasing with it. And nope, she's still going to leave us waiting, because at the end of the day, it's Rihanna's world and we're just living in it. And I'm okay with that.
Amen. Yeah, like, she doesn't need this. This is fun for her. What a blessing. All right, Jake, talk to me about your picks for the ones that didn't make it.
Okay, so in addition to Riri, I was very surprised that the Super Bowl in 2003 with Miss Shania Twain, Let's Go Girls, No Doubt, and Sting didn't make it. Personally, I love, well, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a big Sting fan, but I do love No Doubt and Shania Twain. I've seen Gwen Stefani live solo, and I'm seeing Shania Twain this summer. I cannot wait. But what I liked about the show, I think they chose really smart songs as the artist. Shania started with Man, I Feel Like a Woman, which, fun fact, is the most popular karaoke song in the entire world. And when you're reaching an audience, you know, such as the Super Bowl, having smart song choices like that, that everybody knows it's going to start that way, I thought was really smart. And then she sang Up, which was her next new lead single at that time. And then Gwen Stefani sang two very strong feminist power anthems, Just a Girl, and I'm Just a Girl. And then she sang Message in a Bottle with Sting. Particularly, I thought the highlight was Gwen Stefani. I just thought she, in the 90s, was like her era. And I loved everything that she was doing with No Doubt. I think she has more success. I like her music more with No Doubt than as a solo artist. I like her as a solo artist, but certainly her discography with No Doubt is insane. And I thought they did a really good job, and I was surprised it didn't make it.
Yeah. One of the things that I discovered doing this, as someone who does not watch Super Bowls, and we'll talk in the beginning of part two about our personal like history with Super Bowls, I hadn't really watched a bunch of them, was how many really good ones there were. That was the problem. It was an embarrassment of riches. There are ones that did not make this top 16 that were excellent Super Bowl shows. So this was not, I don't think that was in any way a dig on Shania or that group. I thought it was great. It's just, there are some really amazing ones that did. I will say that for me, speaking of, and I understand why it didn't make it, but I'll put it on here, Justin Timberlake's solo performance in 2018 is actually a really good show from start to finish. He sells it. He has charisma. He commands the camera. He's there. But I think Justin has aged very poorly with his relationship with the Super Bowl, and for very good reason. I think at this point, people are kind of over him and his legacy with this show. But I also think, had he included an NSYNC reunion in this performance, which at the time, everyone speculated he would, and there's precedent for it, if he had done that, it would have been an iconic moment and people would lift it up. But he didn't, and that was a missed opportunity. And I think for that reason, it does not hold the cultural cachet that some other ones we will get to, which were capital M moments that everyone still talks about to this day. So that's my one. I will also give a shout out to the original OG 1967 Super Bowl, which was actually amazing. It is just marching bands and that, but they're so good. Like, they're making different pictures on the field. Like, it was an art to do that. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, I watched this when we started doing a research on this like a year plus ago, but I believe it ends with people in jetpacks in 1967 dressed as footballs. What the fuck? Like, that's amazing. So if you have not watched it, it's a hoot to go back and watch them. They're really something else. So with that out of the way, let's get ready for some check notes football, I guess. On to the debates. First, the panel is evenly split between halftime shows featuring two Motown superstars, the 1993 Super Bowl XXVII show featuring Michael Jackson, and the 1996 Super Bowl XXX show starring Miss Diana Ross. Andrea, explain why Diana still reigns supreme in this matchup. Jake, explain why any MJ doubters can beat it. Jake, you go first.
Okay. I feel like performances like this are the reason we have this podcast. We are the Great Pop Culture Debate, and this halftime performance with Michael Jackson is one of the greatest pop culture moments in history. I think the halftime show was big already, but he made it the holy grail it is today. He comes out, you first is like, will the real MJ please stand up? Four imitations of him come out from each side of the stadium, and then he is catapulted up on a little toaster up on stage. And what does he do once he's on stage? He stands there silent for 2 minutes. Only Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, could do that. Only him. He then goes into what I think, again, is a really smart set, which started with Jam into Billie Jean and then Black and White, which had audience participation and using some different cards. I think someone like Michael Jackson, who isn't such a talented singer, but such a known for being an incredible dancer, picking songs that could really showcase that, he did a fantastic job of. He ended with We Are the World with a children's choir. And again, the audience then had these paper, I don't know what you would call them, but these paper post placards that they flipped over and which form pictures of drawings of children that around the stadium as we Are the World played.
I think it's Heal the World. Not
sorry, Heal the World. It went from We Are the World to Heal the World.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on with the world.
Is basically We Are the World Part 2, like International Boogaloo. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else on Mr. Jackson?
No, I know, you know, Andrea's going to debate for, or, you know, give props to Diana, and I think she's amazing. It's so hard to really, I mean, these are two iconic performances. It's really hard, and I could, you know, it was a close one for me, but ultimately
this one's brutal right out of the gate, folks. Like, this is a difficult matchup because they're both really great ones. But Andrea, why don't you talk about Diana Ross?
Yeah, the second I opened up the bracket and saw that this was the first thing that I had to decide between, I was like, are you kidding me? I waited a year for this. But I think ultimately what swayed me to Diana was the fact that Michael Jackson ended his performance with children singing, because if there's anything that I hate more in the world, it's a choir of children singing. Especially to a really cheesy song. But otherwise, I do love that performance. And yeah, the 2 minutes of silence of just Michael Jackson being Michael Jackson is insane. All that being said, I would like to keep in mind that in 1996, it was the Diana Ross halftime show,
yep.
I believe.
Yep.
Yep. This bitch was 52 years old, and she comes in on this like little 2x2 platform, lowered in by a crane, just standing there being Diana Ross, just being lowered out into the field like an angel from the heavens. Just beautiful, iconic. She had 4 costume changes during this performance, which I don't know. I would have to go back and look, but I can't think of many divas at that point that had that many costume changes during the halftime show. And there were points where she would change costumes, and I was like, how did she do that? Like, I still, yeah. Like, I was watching it, I would rewind it, and I still couldn't figure out how she did it. She had this giant choir singing for her during Ain't No Mountain High Enough. And then after her gigantic set list, which included hits like Stop in the Name of Love, which was the opener, You Can't Hurry Love, Chain Reaction, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, just all these amazing songs, I Will Survive. She ends the show with Take Me Higher. And how does she end the show? By being taken higher, literally out of a god dang helicopter. She's like, oh hey, my ride's here, like literally, oh hey, my ride's here, and jumps into the helicopter and flies away. Like, diva, iconic, legendary, we love it. I can't,
we use the end term iconic. Seriously, we use the term iconic in this show constantly. You tell me a more iconic fucking thing than Diana Ross being like, bye peasants, getting into a helicopter.
Because you know she was thinking it.
Absolutely. She's like, I'm not sitting in this traffic, motherfucker. She's hanging out of it, like with straps around her wrist and just flying away. And now it's just like, nothing compares to this. Call Sinead O'Connor. Gary, where are you?
Dang, yo, honestly, at first I was like, MJ got this. Andrea, why would you do this? That was stuck.
I'm sorry. One, it was hard. It was hard.
That was a really good analysis. And also, these are two best friends. Like, Eric, right? What are you doing to us? You're making us choose.
I'm tearing us apart. I'm not healing the world. I'm destroying it.
You know what? I'm going to give it to Diana. I wasn't originally.
So here's the thing. I watched both of these back to back. They're both amazing. Jake is completely right. That moment where he is popping out all over the place, I was just like, fuck me up. No offense to you, Gaga, but this is an amazing opening. And when he stands there for 2 minutes doing nothing and the crowd is having an absolute like pandemonium fit, I was like, we don't have superstars like this anymore. We don't have it. And he is really, in my opinion, the first great Super Bowl halftime show. This was the beginning. However, he's lip syncing, And I have to take points off of that. Part of my rubric is performance level. The dancing was incredible. He was killing it with the like international male catalog behind him. It was hilarious. I was like, God bless 1993 male fashions. But like, he's killing it in the performance. He's lip syncing, and he's lip syncing especially badly because that little earpiece, like he keeps like doing this the whole performance. I was like, oh, Michael. And then as Andrea pointed out, God damn, that Heal the World song is terrible. It is schmaltzy. And I agree with you, Andrea, like as soon as you bring out the choir of children, it's over. I'm just like, check, please. Which I need to point this out, watching all of the 1990s Super Bowl halftime shows in particular, there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of children across this nation who at one time or another appeared in a Super Bowl halftime show. If you are listening and you did, please reach out because I want to know your journey. I need to find out what it was like for you because I imagine it was awful, but I want to hear the stories.
And there were so many child choirs, not even just like dancers. There were so many children singing. And why? For what?
Like hundreds of them at every show. And I was just like, who is wrangling these kids? Imagine like the Chuck E. Cheese pizza budget for this. On the other hand, you have Diana Ross singing live. Is the vocal great? No, it's not. But it is, I'm sitting there watching it. I was like, this is 12 minutes of chaos. That's the only way to describe this performance because it is just her everywhere. I don't know who directed this. Did they have a plan? I'm not sure. But like, I'm like, where did Diana go? She was doing a costume change like every time, as Andrea pointed out. She is constantly, and the way I would subtitle this performance is one woman's brave struggle against fabric, because every moment she's on that stage, she's being swallowed by some fabulous robe or another. But then she's in that giant gold one that like becomes this huge tent that's behind her. And then she gets in that fucking helicopter and goes. I was just like, it's over. It's done. Finished. They're both incredible. And JQ did a great job defending Michael Jackson. If I had to pick with this one, I give Diana the edge because it was camp. It was spectacle, that ending. And she sang live. That is the great differentiator for me. So JQ, stick in with Diana. Garrett, are you, Jake, are you sticking with Michael?
I mean, both are such incredible performances, but I actually think I am going to switch to Diana because the way that you framed it, Andrea, and the criteria that you included Eric of singing live, you know, I think Michael Jackson moonwalked so Diana could fly, literally.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm going to give it to Diana. I'm going to change my vote.
Scandalous. Gary, you're sticking with Diana.
I am sticking with Diana. Yes.
Andrea, you're still on Team Diana.
Still Team Diana.
We already have an upset. I don't know anything about sports. What is this analogous to in Sportsland?
Oh, this would be the number one seed in basketball or in football losing to an unranked team.
Yeah, we're going to go. It's that. That's exactly what it is. All right. Good
Look
job.
At you, Gary. Look
yes,
at you.
Come on. Yeah. Yes. Next, 3/4 of the panel believe that the hips were not, in fact, lying when Shakira, Bad Bunny, and Jennifer Lopez brought the Latin Heat to Super Bowl 54 in 2020. But Gary wants to take a grenade for the 2014 show at Super Bowl 48 featuring Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Gary, explain why you're still down for Bruno's Uptown Funk. I'll explain why there's always room for J-Lo. I will go first, if that's okay, Gary.
That's fine. Great. Take it.
I think these are both excellent performances. Let me say that right out of the way. Really good musicianship both times. Great, like, stage presence. Both of these are killer. This was right before the apocalypse, right? It was, like, one of the last tastes of normalcy we as a nation experienced for, like, 2+ years. I'm not saying that it makes it better than the 2014 edition, but when you hear 2020, you immediately think, oh God. And this was actually still great. So I think that kind of gives it a little bit of something for me, some joie de vivre, if you will. In terms of the mixing of multiple artists, I think this is easily one of the best examples of that in Super Bowl halftime history. All three of them work together so well, with Bad Bunny kind of serving as the bridge between the two sets from the women. And then it ends with Shakira and Jennifer Lopez making a really big political statement with their Let's Get Loud, Born in the USA duet, featuring a bunch of kids, and then J-Lo draped in a giant Puerto Rico flag, which I loved. Shakira's set to me has more of an organic, kind of verging on chaotic feel, but holy shit, Lopez absolutely owned that stage. She is a consummate professional, and she just radiated superstar on that stage in a way very few Super Bowl performers ever have before or after. I can think of a couple notable exceptions, but she just owned it in that performance. I was so impressed by her. With that being said, Gary, talk to us about Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
All right. So first thing is Bruno started off doing a drum solo. And I think it was when I rewatched it, I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot. He can also play the drums. He can dance. He can sing live. That's going to get a point, Eric, to you. This man is just multi-talented. Like, truly, I think he just oozes it. He's very charismatic. What else did I like? My thoughts on it was that the entire set felt like a throwback to the 90s to me, with like the outfits, the boy band type of approach. Obviously, their dancing was incredible. And it was a nod to James Brown and R&B soul. And then with the collaboration with Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think that was so smart. And the biggest thing that I was looking for was just the transition from him being so left field from them. And it was smooth. And they killed it, and they were jumping everywhere, and just at their age, and it was just like, it felt just very just like ooze sex and ooze confidence, and like they knew what they were doing. And so I'm obsessed with this Super Bowl performance by Bruno. And I think it just shows like how talented he truly, truly is as an artist.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think he gets nearly enough respect, even now. I feel like for whatever reason, that last album with Silk Sonic?
Yeah, Silk Sonic.
Silk Sonic just kind of bombed, and we've kind of forgotten. But like, what an amazing musician and performer he is. Andrea, where are you on this one?
I am sticking with Shakira and J-Lo, ultimately. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings on this performance. I want to save a lot of those arguments. But I also just really dislike the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So it was kind of an easy pick for me. I really wish that performance had just been Bruno Mars the whole time, and I would have been thrilled. But I'm going to stick with Shakira and J-Lo. Also, J-Lo was just coming off of Hustlers at the time. So she had that stripper body going. Mm. Oh man, she was gorgeous. Yeah.
Also, Justice for Hustlers. That's a great
Justice
movie.
For Hustlers.
Yeah. Jake, where are you on this one?
Waka waka. I am sticking with Shakira and J-Lo. I love the fact that J-Lo, as you mentioned, incorporated her daughter Emmy and had a big, bold political statement at a time when we were going through the U.S. border crisis. And I think that, you know, it was a showcase of Latina superwomen and doing it in Miami. And I thought the artists that they brought out were really smart choices. And, you know, the winner of the Super Bowl was not J-Lo, it wasn't Shakira, it wasn't whoever played, but it was the person who did Jennifer Lopez's wig. That wig took a beating. Yes. Oh my God.
Yes.
Watch it again and just look at the move, I can't even, it just, he deserves, I don't know, an Emmy for that, for hair design, because that wig took a beating, and it was still
EGOT
on.
The EGOT and wigography, seriously.
The wigot.
Yes. Yep, the wigot. Love it. All right, so I think that's three for J-Lo and Shakira. I'm sorry, Gary, but
it's okay.
You did a great job.
But I think it's just a highlight. It's so important, like what you all said about just the culture reset that it was. It was so impactful, and it was so needed. And I, like, this is hard for me, too, doing this round, because I really thought that it was way more than just in performing. It was really highlighting like the beauty of Latin community and Latin culture. So
100. Well, excellent. Next, the majority of the panel wants to keep soaking up Prince in his Purple Rain from the 2007 Super Bowl. But Gary was feeling the pull of 1999 Celebration of Soul, Salsa, and Swing, starring Gloria Estefan, Stevie Wonder, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and Savion Glover. Gary, explain why the 1999 edition makes you want to dance with somebody. Andrea, explain why Prince still deserves this crown. Gary, if you don't mind, I'll have you go first.
Yes. Okay, so just jumping right back into what I just said. For me, I think that this truly is a definition of how music and art transcends cultures. Gloria and Stevie, just in general, for me, stood out, but they definitely made a splash, and you couldn't help but to dance and smile and just celebrate, like, just all of the variety of music and styles and genres that was there. Obviously, my favorite number was Sir Duke. I'm a big Stevie fan, and I'm also glad that Gloria, after, like, going back and watching, like, highlights and reels of all of the Super Bowls, that Gloria got her redemption from the 92 Super Bowl. So I think it was a smart move on them, and it was a incredible, like, just beautiful celebration performance. So I think that alone, like, we have to give it to Gloria, or the 1999 Soul celebration.
Excellent. Andrea, talk to us about Prince.
There's so much to say about the Prince performance, but I will give credit where credit is due for that 1999 performance. I remember when I was rewatching it just recently, they like go through who all the performers will be. And then it says featuring Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. I was like, featuring Big Bad Voodoo Daddy? They're the feature? What a 1999 statement and performance. Yeah. But it was fun. It was a good time. And really, that's all you can ask for from the Super Bowl. Prince, however, man, it's such a big topic because this is one of the most covered and talked about Super Bowl performances. So I'll keep it brief because I'm sure we're going to come back to it later on down the road. But as we all know, rained super hard that entire performance. And of course, the rain comes pouring down even more during Purple Rain. And it was like this beautiful, like God-sent moment. And it was just one of those things where it felt like it was something that only Prince could do. Like, we know Prince didn't make the rain happen, but like, didn't Prince make the rain happen?
Didn't he? Yeah.
It was just such a Prince performance. And kind of what we were saying about Michael Jackson, how there's no pop stars like that. There's no one like Prince anymore in the music industry. And I don't think there will be anyone like Prince in the music industry, especially someone that had the range and the span that he had with fans. Everyone liked Prince. You know, this was 2007. This was pre-Obama administration. Like, people really loved this guy just as an American society. And I don't think we're going to have a person like that anymore. And that's really sad. But I love Prince, I guess is what I have to say. There's a lot to say about this halftime show. There was a massive set list. He did a 4-song medley of a bunch of his songs. And then he did cover songs, which we didn't really see a lot before that. We saw some covers or homages, but he was doing genuine covers of, what did he do? Queen, Ike and Tina. He did Proud Mary. He did All Along the Watchtower by Hendrix. He even did a Foo Fighter song that had like just come out that same year or the year before. And I was like doing some reading, and there's a bit with Taylor Hawkins, who passed away within the last couple of years, the drummer of Foo Fighters. He was watching the halftime show, or he's watching the Super Bowl. I forget, there's a football game that happened during this. He was watching the Super Bowl and he was like outside smoking with Neil Peart, because like, why not? And his buddy comes running out and they're like, dude, Prince is doing one of your songs at the halftime show. Like, they didn't know that Prince was going to do one of their songs, because that was just the kind of person that he was. He just did things. He just did what he wanted to do. And we love that. I respect him so much for that. I hope whatever astral plane he's existing on these days, you know, he's very happy and he's very proud of that performance.
I have to imagine that Prince, in whatever higher state of existence he's in now, is being like, I did that fucking thing, right? Jake, where are you on this one?
Yeah, no, I'm sticking with Prince, and I'll be arguing it later on, so I want to save some of my art, my points for that. But yeah, I am sticking with Prince. I think having literal purple rain, you can't beat it.
this to me was one of those capital M moment Super Bowl halftime shows that like everybody talked about. And the other one that you talked about, Gary, was excellent. I am glad that Gloria, who I think if you look back, Gloria's in, I think, three or four different Super Bowl halftime shows. Like she's had a story. She may be the one who's performed the most. I don't know if that's true, but I think she's got to be up there. Well, no, it's up with People that's performed the most, which is a sad state, but here we are. I'm glad she got her redemption. But to me, like, that Prince show was just, even if you weren't a Prince fan, Andrea, I think you watched that show and was like, this is a concert that I would have paid money to, and I'm getting this for free, you know, while I'm eating my Tino's pizza rolls over here, right? Reasons not to watch the Bissell Kitty halftime show, the Prince halftime show. That's what I'm saying. All right. So we are going to advance Prince to round two. Next, poor Gary is the odd man out again. Gary, I am so sorry. This time preferring the 2016 Super Bowl 50 show starring Coldplay, Bruno Mars, and Beyonce, while the rest of us preferred 2022's hip-hop R&B showcase starring Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, 50 Cent, Mary J. Blige, and Eminem. Gary, explain why you're still warm for Coldplay. Jake, drop a few lines for us and explain why this rap back should make us go with the flow. I'm going to have Jake go first.
Okay, let me explain why Gary is so wrong. I love Beyonce. I love Bruno Mars. And I like Coldplay. Individually, I thought all three, it was a little chaotic, but let me stick to why I think that the 2022 halftime show with Dr. Dre, Snoop, Eminem, Mary J., and Kendrick is superior to this. I think it was a nod to my generation growing up, Generation X and, you know, the millennials, with so much music that we grew up with. You know, it started out with not just from California Love by Snoop Dogg and then Into Club, Family Affair by Mary J., all songs that were the playlists of my childhood. I thought because there were so many artists performing that it was going to be a little awkward. It'd be like not enough time. But I thought they were able to really smartly balance it and that each artist really had enough time to showcase on their own. And they really made the most of it. And I thought it was a really powerful moment. We talked about some political aspects of these performances. After Eminem saying, "Lose Yourself," he took a knee, which there was a little controversy because some people thought that that, you know, had been a pre-hyped controversy. But regardless, I think it was a powerful statement to utilizing that platform. And I think one thing that I really put in how I rate these Super Bowl performances by production value. And I think it really made sense given the artist and the song. It was kind of like it was very white, but it was a long West Coast neighborhood. It had convertibles, houses. And just beyond that, the thing that did it for me, my favorite part of it was this. Anytime Mary J. Blige dances, honestly, she gets into it and she was bejeweled from head to toe, living in her boots and leotard. And Mary J. was in the house tonight and she's going to make me feel all right. And she did.
She did. She's so good in that halftime show. She just lets go. And I love it when she does that. Gary, talk to me about the Coldplay Bruno Mars Beyonce show.
Okay. I see that Jake is on the defense. So let me just take offense for this one. You know, to start off, I would argue all day. Kendrick Lamar is one of my favorite artists. I did his album of the year. So if anyone's listening, I am a big Kendrick fan. However, Jake, you pointed something out, was that it had an undertone of just, it's very political, and it was very into the culture. And I think for me, honestly, the biggest point was Beyonce coming out and premiering Formation. And so you talk about a time where it was really like, F you to the NFL, F you to whatever the status quo is, this very like, Kumbaya Super Bowl, when the Super Bowl was going through DVs, concussion, things like that, and obviously police brutality. And I think the way that it felt like Bruno and Coldplay provided that the extra platform for Beyonce to experience that, to showcase that, and they were right in Formation in it. Really, I think, outside of just the entertainment value, this was one of those Super Bowls that was talking, had everyone talking. Good or bad, it made you come to the table. It made you really assess it outside of, oh, she was on a platform or he had this riff on this guitar. It was, oh crap, like Beyonce is really stirring some stuff up. And just going to like the actual production of it, the costumes, gorgeous. The way that Beyonce, and I think Beyonce and Bruno, to me, the way they just vibe off each other was just sexy and it's again, charismatic. And I just think for those reasons, absolutely, I think this is like probably one of my favorite Super Bowl halftime shows.
To me, I thought it was so nice of Bruno and Beyonce to let Coldplay open for them. That's that, like watching it, I was just like, so nice, oh, that was really kind. That was very giving. Andrea, where are you on this one?
I'm sticking with Dr. Dre, Snoop, and crew. And that was going to be my main point, Eric, was I think if Coldplay had been eliminated from the mix and it was just Beyonce and Bruno Mars, I think that would have been fantastic. But Coldplay kind of killed it for me. And it was such a big halftime show, too. Like, this was Super Bowl 50. This wasn't like some halftime. This wasn't a game that, like, would only get a certain amount of viewers, but they knew they were going to be getting more viewers for Super Bowl 50 than anything else. And so I appreciate that Beyonce was able to come out and do Formation, which I'm not, like, we've talked about this in other music episodes before. I'm not in the Beehive. I respect Beyonce for what she does and what she brings to the table, but she's like not my personal favorite.
Gay gasp.
I know, I'm sorry. But even watching her performance during that halftime show, I was like, okay, this bitch can do the thing, can't she?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, she's a performer, and I love that for her. All that being said, Dr. Dre and Snoop, there was a lot happening during that halftime show, too, at a time where I think that was needed during the most watched thing on television when they had the most viewers at a time. I appreciated Eminem taking a knee. Like, he like literally was the only white guy in that performance, came out, did his thing, and took a knee. Like, I think that's pretty powerful, whether or not that was an industry plant pre-hyped thing or not. Also, not featured in that the headliner list is Anderson .Paak played drums during that performance. Like, he's just sitting there chilling, playing drums with this big goofy smile on his face. And I was sad that he didn't get a shout out for that. But Dr. Dre and Snoop.
So for me, one of my rubrics for this, in addition to like the overall performance, and I think both of these shows had excellent performances, say what you will about Coldplay, but like they do what they do musically very well, right? Like they know how to get a crowd going and they know how to get them amped up. But I think musically they're on even keels in terms of like the level of performance. Is it giving something new to the conversation? And I thought that the Super Bowl 51, yes, it gave us Formation, which was a very important cultural moment, but it was also like Bruno and Beyonce had both performed already at the Super Bowl within the last few years before that. And I don't think Coldplay was giving us anything new. I think Coldplay was giving us, like, even frankly, past their prime Coldplay. Like, who was listening to Coldplay in 2020, whatever it was. But we had not really had a full hip-hop R&B Super Bowl show. We'd had them as parts of other ones. This was fully putting that entire musical genre in front of the entirety of America. And many of those people had no idea who those artists were. And some of them had probably never heard those songs. And I thought that was great. I also loved how, what's the word I'm looking for? How the ease of sharing and passing the mic from performer to performer. That was a huge lineup, and they all just flowed from one to another. Very, God, I'm completely missing my words here, but it was seamless. Like, it was just, everybody just immediately passed it over. Like, it was almost as like there was this game where people throw a ball to another person and they catch it and then they score a goal. It was like that. I don't know what that game is. I don't care about it. But no, I thought it was really good. And I thought that I don't care if the knee was planned ahead of time. Who cares? Like, why is that an issue if it was? It's a performance and it was a moment to grab attention. I'm fine if he pre-planned that. You know what I mean? So for me, that's why I'm going with Super Bowl, whatever it was here, the hip hop showcase. I'm so sorry, Gary. You are getting your butt kicked this time. Okay. I feel really bad.
I'm down an inning.
You are. I don't know what that means, but I think you are. Thank you for
Gary
being
likes
so
getting his butt kicked. He's a great tight end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've heard.
That.
Come in the locker room.
Next in the unanimous decision, 2013 Super Bowl 47 featuring Beyonce with Destiny's Child, speaking of her, stomped all over former Beatle Paul McCartney at the 2005 Super Bowl. I put that one in there. I regret my decisions. Next, the majority of the panel is ready to roar for the 2015 Super Bowl featuring Katy Perry, Missy Elliott, and Lenny Kravitz. But I'm a messy bitch who lives for drama, and I'm picking the 2004 Choose or Lose Super Bowl debacle starring Janet Jackson, Diddy, Nelly, Kid Rock, and Justin Timberlake. Andrea, why should we make like Left Shark and wave Katy Perry and co through? I will speak on Miss Jackson because I am indeed nasty. I'm going to go first since I know I don't have the votes and you actually might get to save your argument here. But you want to talk about memorable Super Bowl halftime shows. How are we not going to talk about 2004? It is the most talked about halftime show in the history of the Super Bowl, and I think it will go down as the most talked about one. Is it the best halftime show, however? Probably not. It's really a mixed bag, frankly. Janet is pretty rote for the first chunk of her performance. The choreography is solid. The lip syncing is present. Frankly, she gets almost totally lost behind those bangs. Diddy and Nelly pick up the energy nicely. Kid Rock fully Kid Rocks, which frankly is the most offensive thing to me than any nipple, covered or not. Justin breaks swagger in his literally like minutes long segment. And then there's the capital T, capital I incident. I still don't think there is any real clarity about what actually went down there. Was it intentional? If so, whose idea was it? I find it very hard to believe that someone behind the scenes was not intending for that breast covering to get removed exactly as Justin sang, "Gonna have you naked by the end of this song." I've seen Janet blamed. I've seen Justin blamed. I've seen the costumer blamed. I've watched actual documentaries about this, and I still do not know whose idea it was. But the real perpetrator here is the legions of pearl-clutching prudes across America. Janet's shielded nipple was hardly this shocking image. And if she were a white woman, I guarantee you, this would never have been an issue. But I still believe white America was always itching for an excuse to 86 her career for decades. Justin emerges absolutely unblemished, even throwing Janet under the bus, which he acknowledged and apologized for like a decade plus later. But Janet was Chernobyl after this. She is only now almost 20 years after this incident reemerging, and it is a scandal that this is what turned into the scandal that it was. Fucking America. That is my rant. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Andrea.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I will never forgive Justin Timberlake for not coming to Janet's defense during all of that.
Yeah.
Need I remind our listeners that he kind of did the same thing to Britney Spears.
Yes, he did.
When they broke up. So there's that. I'm just going to leave that out there. Other than that, I really loved the, what was this, 2015 halftime show. This was really just for Missy Elliott to kind of make her big return. And I love that for her. You know, I'm not a Katy Perry fan. I have various thoughts and opinions about her, but I mean, she's got bangers, right? She started off with Roar and like comes out on this giant lion that's like all lit up in neon lights and stuff. That's pretty cool. We got Left Shark out of the performance, which I would like to say, going back and watching this halftime show, I was like, ooh, I'm gonna get to relive Left Shark. I was watching it and I was like, I don't know which one is Left Shark.
Is
it my left? Is it stage left? And I was like, yes, they both look out of.
They're the same. But we made such a big deal out of it.
We made such a big deal out of it for like years to come. Yes. Left Shark. Yes. There was Halloween costumes that were labeled Left Shark. And I'm like, I still don't know which one Left Shark is.
No.
outside of that, we also had Lenny Kravitz, which I didn't know people really cared about in that capacity. But he did a song with Katy Perry. He did I Kissed a Girl with her. And then we got Missy coming out and kind of making her big return to the stage. And I think that that was really important for her to show this new generation how important she is to music, to pop music, to hip hop, to R&B. You know, I think she really got her flowers for that performance, even if she was only on there for two or three songs. But I was doing some looking into stats, and this Super Bowl is credited as the second most watched program in American television history.
Wow.
With a viewership of 114.4 million. And let's see, the halftime show was also watched by 118.5 million, which was 3 million more than Bruno Mars the years prior. This was a big deal. And maybe that was why we made Left Shark a whole thing. I don't know. 2015 was wild. There was a lot going on in 2015. Yeah. We were kind of prepping for some things to happen. We were just looking for something to hold on to, I think, some innocence.
Yeah.
So, but really, this performance is about Missy Elliott more than anything.
Sure. So, Jake, where are you on this one?
Yeah, I am totally team Missy and Katy. I 100% agree with what Andrea said. I was so happy when Missy Elliott came out and got her dues to probably a whole new generation who didn't know, you know, who she was or some of her songs. And most recently, she was just inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think. And so it's great to see that this is continuing. You know, say what you want about Katy Perry. She has some great songs. She basically ruled the 2010s with her teenage dream era. Yeah, of course, everything with Left Shark. But my biggest thing, I mean, even though some people thought Lenny Kravitz wasn't necessary, Lenny Kravitz was my sexual awakening. So I can always get down for some Lenny. Other than that, you know, she may not be the greatest dancer. She may not be the greatest vocalist, but she makes up for it like in ingenuity and just enthusiasm. And it's ending it with firework. On a literal firework, on the More You Know firework going around the stadium was just epic. And I thought a great finale to what was a great pop culture show and probably the highlight of her career.
Yeah. And I was going to make that point. I will talk about this actually more in next round, but I agree with you. This is the apex of Katy Perry's career right here. This moment, this is what it is, the definitive moment of her career. So I agree. Gary, where are you on this one?
So first, I'm glad Janet is finally getting her flowers as well. And forever since that moment, was never a big Justin fan since then. Thank you both, Andrea and Eric, for bringing up. It took him 10 years for Janet, and he let Britney down. But I'm a big Nelly fan. Nelly's from my hometown, so that's hard. But I'm going with Missy Elliott. Not Katy Perry, because I'm not a big Katy Perry fan. But I was so excited to see Missy being showcased in a way that she was. And to see her now, like Jake, you said, being inducted to the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm glad that momentum has continued on. She is so important to just music and art and the culture itself. And so is Janet. And so to see two Black women be able to be celebrated now after so much... is amazing, but I'm gonna go with Missy Elliott.
Come on, misdemeanor. Katy Perry.
Misdemeanor.
Come on, work it. And I will say this: I do think Katy Perry, Missy Elliott is a better Super Bowl show, so I'm fine with it moving on. But we had to talk about 2004. We had to talk about it, so we will advance Katy Perry next. Two more unanimous decisions that close out round one, as Lady Gaga at the 2017 Super Bowl dove to an easy victory over 1995's Indiana Jones tribute. The 1990 Super Bowl halftime shows were wild. People, go back and watch them for the camp of it all. And 1998's Motown 40th anniversary performance left 2001's Kings of Rock and Pop, featuring Aerosmith and NSYNC, saying bye bye bye. And that's the end of round one. We're going to take a quick break so I can figure out exactly what a tight end is, because that's relevant to my interests. I'll even take a wide receiver. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hey, squirrel friends. Curtis here from the Great Pop Culture Debate. We hope you're enjoying this episode of the podcast. But did you know, much like RuPaul's Drag Race, if you're not a Patreon supporter, honey, you're only getting half the story. Our patrons at the $5 level gain access to exclusive content for each episode, where the debaters go from the top 32 competitors down to the sweet 16. It's like a whole bonus episode for each topic. So if you love our content and want more of it, head to patreon.com/greatpopculturedebate and become a Patreon supporter today.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back for round two of our best Super Bowl halftime show debate. Before we get into the Elite Eight, I want our panelists to share their social media and also let us know what they're up to, as well as their first Super Bowl memory. Andrea, can I start with you, please?
Yes. First, you can find me on the Hellfire Bird site app, Twitter, at Dre Souffle. I have an Etsy shop of the same name, Dre Souffle, where you can get stickers and vinyl decals and all that fun stuff. My first, I don't know if I have a first memory of the Super Bowl, but my birthday is within the first few days of February. So I have a lot of memories of sharing my birthday celebrations with my family with the Super Bowl. So lots of chicken wings and dips and chips, which is fine because those are like my main food groups now anyway. So they were great birthdays, great Super Bowls.
Did you have cakes that were shaped like footballs?
No, I should have. I'm going to demand one the next time that it falls on my birthday.
Absolutely. Yes. Get into it. All right. Thank you. Gary, how about you?
Yes. So you can find me on IG at Gary Music Man J. And what I'm working on right now, since we're doing a sports or Super Bowl related episode, I am part of Kickball League and a Dodgeball League. And I just finished up Flag Football League. So she is trying to be a sporty girl. So catch me Sundays, Saturdays, and Thursdays playing some type of sport. And then I'm trying to think of the show or the Super Bowl that I remember. I have this vague memory of when the St. Louis Rams were a team. I'm assuming this is probably like late 90s. And it was Kurt Warner was the quarterback, and they were like this yellow and blue color back in the day. And the St. Louis Rams won. And I remember like just that being like just huge. But yeah, that's my first memory of a Super Bowl.
I don't understand a word that you just said, but I love listening to it.
She used to be a sports girl.
Oh my gosh. I'm so impressed. I really am. Thank you, Gary. Jake, talk to me about your socials, what you're doing, and your first Super Bowl memory.
Yeah, I can be found on the gram at jtaysu_ and at Twitter. At Twatter at Taysu_26. My first Super Bowl memory, honestly, is Nipplegate. I never really came out to watch, you know, my parents already knew I wasn't interested in like football. but I would come out for the halftime show. And it's so funny. I remember my mom and dad saying, Jay, come on, the halftime show is about to begin. And then what I witnessed with my parents thereafter is it's a core memory. Yeah. And it's also my first memory.
Were your parents like actually like, oh my God, was that her breast?
I think we were all just like confused after. Was like that really? Because in that day, you know, we didn't have high definition. Right. I couldn't like, you know, we were watching on like a 24 inch, like, you know, tube television. I really wasn't sure. And it's not like you could just go back on YouTube and like replay it or whatever. So we were really, we're like, no, that couldn't have been. But here we are.
It was like 4 pixels, like, and people lost their minds. Crazy times. All right. So you can find me at Eric Resniak. That's E-R-I-C, R-E-Z as in zebra, S as in snake, N as in Nancy, Y-A-K on Twitter and Instagram. But really, you should just mention at Great Pop Culture Debate on Insta or at GPCD on Mastodon. It's the best way to get in touch with us. For my first Super Bowl memory, I can say with absolute honesty, I've never in my life watched an actual Super Bowl from start to finish. I do have a memory of being 10, maybe, and trying to watch the game because I knew I was supposed to, because that's what the boys were supposed to do, and being really excited about the various array of chips that were present. I'm being very excited about that. And then lasting maybe 20 minutes, but I was like, this is not it. Like, I was just like, when does something happen? Hello. And so after that, I was just like, I'm going to go upstairs and read comic books, but, you know, bless their hearts. This is the closest we will ever get to discussing sports on the Great Pop Culture Debate. Except I do think we're at some point talking about doing a best college mascot, like, debate, which I think could be fun. So, and I'm always down for like doing a debate on the cutest football outfits. Like, I would absolutely, I would eat that up. So maybe, but for right now, the closest you'll ever get to sports on this show. With that being said, let's move into round two, when the former members of our podcast will shoot out of the stage and surprise and delight the audience. First up, it's Diana Ross from the 1996 Super Bowl versus Jennifer Lopez, Shakira, and Bad Bunny from the 2020 edition. We're just going to go around the horn on this one. I'd like to start with you, Andrea. Where do you vote?
I know I stumped so hard for Diana Ross, but my vote lies with Shakira, J-Lo, and Bad Bunny.
All right. Gary, where are you on this one?
I will have to agree. I think Shakira, J-Lo, and Bad Bunny.
Jake?
I have to go with Diana. I mean, she's the only person with an aircraft on a halftime show, so I have to give her some props for that. Or a propeller.
It's propel her forward. Ah. So Diana is the only 90s one still in the bracket. I don't know if that impacts your decision making or not, because we're talking about best, right? And I think we can all agree that generally speaking, these shows have gotten better over time. And it's certainly more of a spectacle, certainly higher production values. I do love the chaos of the Diana Ross one. It is just like you're watching and being like, who is directing this? It's just at all times, just there is no focus to anything that's going on. Diana's singing, but she's kind of just like, you can tell she's putting on a sleeve or something. Sing it louder with me. You know, the lyrics, sing them. You know, it's great. It's great. Like, auntie energy. And that fucking helicopter really is the stuff of legend. What's the better show? I will give it to Shakira, Bad Bunny, and Jennifer Lopez. That is a fucking show, whereas the Diana Ross is a camp extravaganza that I can't get enough of. But I will give it to Shakira here. So we will move forward. Jennifer Lopez, Shakira, Bad Bunny. Next, I think it's unanimous for Prince in the 2007 edition, unless someone thinks we forgot about Dre and the Hip Hop Palooza from 2022. Jake, where are you on this one?
Oh, totally Team Prince.
All right, Gary.
Team Prince.
Andrea.
The purple one, Prince.
The purple one. It's Tubby. What was it? Tinky Winky? Was that the Teletubby that was purple? I can't remember.
Dipsy.
Maybe. Yes. Lala. It's amazing. Where's the Teletubby halftime show? Next, it's definitely a clean sweep for Beyonce's 2013 epic, which stomped right across Katy Perry and the 2015 halftime show. Right? Nobody's voting for Katy Perry here. I will say again, this to me is the highlight of Katy Perry's career. She is not a live performer. I remember seeing her on a Victoria's Secret fashion show, and it was cringe after cringe after cringe. And that's really saying something because it was a Victoria's Secret fashion show. But this, whoever did the production design for this nailed it. She was at her best, I think, in her live vocals I've ever seen her. It was just fun. It was great. And Missy was a moment. And the duet with what am I blanking on his name? Lenny Kravitz was fun and sexy. It was like, seriously, she couldn't have asked for anything better, and she will never top this in her career. So good for you, Katy Perry. Enjoy the lesser version of American Idol. Cash those $20 million of season checks. But that being said, Beyonce continues. Finally, in round two, the majority of the panel thinks Lady Gaga and the 2017 edition really are on the edge of Final Four glory. But I want to throw it back to 1998 in the Motown 40th edition extravaganza, featuring The Temptations, Smokey Robinson, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, Boyz II Men, and Queen Latifah. I'm going to go ahead and sing myself out because I know that we've come to the end of the road for Motown. I'm assuming here, Gary, you're with Lady Gaga in 2017.
I'm with Lady Gaga, yeah.
Andrea?
Lady Gaga, yes.
Gaga, yes. Jake?
LG, baby.
Yes. So I will say this about the Motown extravaganza. I loved that it bridged classic Motown and current Motown for that era. I thought that was great. I did think it was a very successful 90s show. It was clean. It was well produced. Things moved smoothly. Smokey Robinson is always amazing. Like, you show me a performance when Smokey Robinson doesn't deliver, it doesn't happen. Martha's was obviously some Martha had some stuff with her voice that had happened over the decades, but I'm always happy to see her. I am a Fandella. I think she's great. Boyz II Men was lip syncing during the Motown Philly bit, which I was just like, are they going to sing? And then they did a song for Mama, which I was like, oh boy, this is rough. And then you did have Queen Latifah doing her rewritten version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine. But I don't know if Queen Latifah was known as a singer at that point. She was a rapper, but I think this was like maybe even before her Dana Owens project. So I think it was kind of a revelation for her to be there. And then I didn't check this. I'm bad. Was it that wasn't the original lineup of the Temptations that was performing at that Super Bowl, was it? They looked very young.
I don't think so.
I was like, they must moisturize like crazy because they looked like they were in their 30s and it was the Temptations. Yeah. But it was solid. It was a great show. It's just up against Lady Gaga. And we'll get into that more in the Final Four because Lady Gaga's advancing. With that, we do have our Final Four. We're going to take a quick break and get spirited away via helicopter. We'll be right back after these messages. We are back with the Final Four of our Best Super Bowl Halftime Show debate. During the break, we auditioned for Up With People and were turned down by people. At this point in the show, I always like to take a step back and see if the Final Four matches up with what I figured. We have Shakira and Jennifer Lopez at the 2020 Halftime Show versus Prince at the 2007 show. Beyonce at the 2012 show versus Lady Gaga at the 2017 show. This is a real clash of the titans. The only other one I can see, I could have actually seen Michael Jackson making here. That's how strong of a Sweet 16 he had. And I do think that the Katy Perry one, as Andrea pointed out, was one of the highest rated television broadcasts ever. And it really does. We had a Mandela effect with Left Shark that we all realized that, like, it wasn't that crazy, but we all thought it was crazy. Okay, well, sure. But it's a great Final Four. It is a really good matchup. And I think all four of these are actually shows that have at least, I'm not going to say a cultural message, but made an impact on the culture in various ways. So let us start with Shakira and Jennifer Lopez versus Prince. We're going to go around the horn. Gary, where are you on this one?
Oh, I'm still stuck with what Andrea said, and so I'm going to go with Prince.
Okay. Jake, where are you?
I agree with Gary, Prince.
Andrea.
Can I say some things?
Yes, this is the time. We're in Final Four. Let's say some things.
So I want to preface that ultimately, I'm going to go with Prince. But I just want to talk about Shakira, J-Lo, Bad Bunny, because I don't think we've given it enough attention. I don't know if y'all remember 2020, but it was garbage. There was a lot happening. There was the crisis at the border happening. Trump was happening. Lots of awful things were happening. And it was at a time where the Latino population was kind of under the public eye a little bit more. And me being Chicana, that was a really hard time for me and my family. There was just a lot happening. And so to see Shakira and J-Lo and Bad Bunny and like all of these like fantastic artists, not just Latin artists, just artists in general, they're all fantastic. And to see them up on stage on this platform, doing what they do best, making the statements that they made, and being revered for it, I think was super, super, super important for everyone. But for people like me, people darker than me, people with an accent, people that speak Spanish, you know, the it was wild in 2020 is what I'll say. So that show personally got me super emotional and was just a really big deal. But that being said, I still believe that Prince put on the better performance, the better show, the better moment. And it sucks that these two shows are going up against each other. I think if Shakira and Bad Bunny and J-Lo were on the other side of this bracket, I would easily be pushing them forward. And I could see this being Prince versus Shakira, J-Lo, Bad Bunny. But unfortunately, that's not the way the bracket worked this time. And I'm just, can I just blame you, Eric, for that?
Yes. Does that fine? Do.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's fine.
Cool. So we're gonna do that. So Prince, ultimately, I just wanted to say all of that.
Yeah, and I agree with everything that you just said. I think I referred to Shakira's performance in round one as being felt more organic. The joy, the just, it radiated out of her. J-Lo's was more like perfection, more glossy, more like she's giving you blue steel through that entire performance. One thing I will say, I believe J-Lo was lip sync for at least part of her performance.
Part she of it, had I believe. To be. Yeah.
I mean, my God, she's being flipped around. She's on a pole. She was just, she's everything in that thing. But I think she is lip syncing. Shakira was singing live through the whole thing, I believe. And then at the end, J-Lo was singing live, I believe. It was with her daughter, right? Yeah. And so I thought that was a real moment. And her draped in that Puerto Rican flag is like, that is one of those photos that I think at the end of her career is going to be a quintessential J-Lo photo, right? This is a capital M moment. Unfortunately, it's up against Prince, which is a capital M moment for the entirety front to end of his entire set. That the rain with the curtain up and him in the background with the guitar and the cymbal, forget it. It's amazing. It is one of those like snapshot moments that will live on in time forever. And I just, it's very hard to go up against that. So I am also with Prince on this one, but it's a great final four. Beyonce versus Lady Gaga. I want to start with Jake. Now is the time when you have to pick a side in the gay culture wars.
Oh, woof. All right. As I said before, this is going to break my soul and my whole. Either way, I'm going
must
to
be
go
a day ending in D-A-Y. Yeah.
you know me too well. I have to go, as much as I love Beyonce and I am admittedly part of the Beehive, I have to go with Lady Gaga. I am a little monster, but I think with all the criterion we've been using, live vocals, choreography, production value, ingenuity, and she also played the guitar and the piano, all of this, and she did it by herself. She didn't have any extra guests, any other performers. She did that start to finish. And let's talk about that. She started by, at the top of the NRG Stadium in Houston, singing God Bless America. And also this land is your land. And I think that, you know, was a slighted message towards, this was 2017. This is right after Donald Trump got elected. And that was a very clever way of getting her point across in a way that wouldn't upset conservatives. Even so much that Marco Rubio was tweeting after the Super Bowl halftime show saying, oh, Gaga was great. Great to see no political, like, you know, action shaking. Yeah, right. I'm like, no, everything was political. Speaking of that, she was the first person to, you know, mention the LGBT community on the Super Bowl halftime show with her performance of Born This Way. And so I thought that was super impactful. It was interesting. This halftime show was also filmed behind the scenes with her Netflix documentary, Gaga 5'2". I don't know if you guys have seen it, but, you know, just seeing the pain that she went through with her fibromyalgia and what she had to battle to be there was just incredible. And I think she had a really smart song list. She started, you know, with Poker Face into Born This Way, into Telephone, Just Dance, then slowed it down to Million Reasons. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love that little moment when she shouted out to them. I mean, how cool. I mean, that, like, I could not think of, like, a more proud parent moment, right? Than seeing, like, your daughter shout you out at the fucking Super Bowl. Yeah, and then she just ended with Bad Romance, which I think is Lady Gaga's quintessential song. And with the pyrotechnics, the choreography, and at the end, where there are so many times where this could have gone wrong, whether it was jumping off the roof, but at the end, she is thrown a bejeweled football as she runs up this ladder. And she easily could have dropped it. I mean, I sure would have. But no, she catches it and then jumps off into the abyss. And just such an iconic entrance. From jumping off the stage and then to jumping off into the middle of nowhere. I just think in everything in between, it was 12 minutes of pure perfection. And it is the halftime show that I have watched the most. Even before we were doing this, I would just watch it on if I needed a little pep, a little boost.
She took that bejeweled football. She dove into the abyss. And that's how homophobia lost right there. Andrea, where are you on this one?
So this final four is my exact final four in my bracket. Mm. And I believe I have Beyonce/Destiny's Child going forward. However, I think I'm switching my vote to the Lady Gaga. Mm. I think after we've been talking about the different criterias and the things that we're taking into consideration, I think Stephanie takes the cake with just the performance and the attitude. She easily could have brought out Beyonce during Telephone, making Beyonce probably the most performed artist at the Super Bowl, but she didn't. She was like, no, this is about me. And it was just a fantastic performance at a time when there was a lot happening. I mean, there's been a lot happening the last 10 years, let's be real. But opening with those very Americana songs was an incredibly smart choice, even if I didn't particularly enjoy them. She's smart. She's a businesswoman. She's a performer. She's an entertainer. She knows what she's doing. I did watch that documentary on Netflix, and there was a scene in there that cracks me up every time. I still think about it. They're practicing something and they got a jacket and she's like changing jackets and the lining of the jacket is not the original lining that they had planned. And she's like freaking out because she's like, this extra 2 seconds of me putting my arm in the jacket is going to put an extra 2 seconds on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And I'm like, calm down. First off, like, you are not the first person to like perform at the Super Bowl with costume changes. You're fine.
Diana Ross, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. but it was just a testament to how seriously she was taking this halftime show. And I really do believe that this was one of the last times that it was considered a true honor to be asked to perform at the halftime show. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this was the last year where you got paid to do the halftime show. Now it's pay to perform. You don't get, I mean, you can get approached, but you don't get paid out like they used to.
I didn't know this.
I didn't know that. Yes, I thought they always just didn't get paid in exchange for the publicity and
sales. Rihanna didn't get paid for this one. Yeah, it changed.
Really?
it's looked at as a big advertising platform for them, a big publicity platform from them.
That's why she did her Fenty.
And the Super Bowl just doesn't bring in the money and the advertisements like it used to before.
Sure.
You know, people don't watch live television like they used to.
Yep.
So I think she was one of the last ones, if not the last one, to be approached and paid to do the halftime show.
That's super interesting. Thank you for dropping that knowledge. That's a really interesting element to this. Gary, where are you?
Oh, so I am a big Beyonce fan, but I think, Jake, you made like some incredible points. So I'll give you to you there. And I also truly don't. I'm like trying to convince myself that this was the best Beyonce and Destiny's Child like performance. And it wasn't. She's brought them out of Coachella, like other venues, and it was good. It was entertaining, but it wasn't to me like their best performance. And I just think just the level of Lady Gaga bringing in the gays and the straights, like she really queered it up. And I just think smart decisions, like smart choices, daring choices, and I have to just give it to Lady Gaga, as hard as it is to say, but she made some really smart decisions in her performance, and I think that's why she should be in the final two.
Wow. So I will be very honest. I'm actually not a part of the Beehive. I enjoy Beyonce, and I've come to embrace her, especially I quit my job very much influenced by Break My Soul. Like, she came down and inhibited me. But I will say I was actually going to give it to Beyonce here, and I'll tell you why. I actually do think of the two performances, hers is stronger and cleaner and more precise. However, I think that both Andrea and Jake raised really great arguments here for why Gaga should advance. And the reason I did not have Gaga advancing is because I felt that this performance from her, she's throwing everything at the wall. There is like, she's holding nothing back. And there are times where I feel it verges into unintentional camp. Like the beginning you mentioned, Andrea, the God Bless America stuff, was like, okay. But I also understand that was a very specific, deliberate decision to do. And while it may not resonate with me, it was making a point to an audience that wasn't otherwise going to pay attention to Lady Gaga because, oh, she's that weird one who's got like comes out in an egg and wears meat dresses, right? But you're right. She was doing that for a very deliberate purpose. And there are times where I think she veers into like, it's so gung-ho and gonzo that I was just like, can we turn it down a little? But this is also the Super Bowl halftime show. It is not the time to turn anything down. It is the time to go for it. And there are other acts that performed. I don't know if you've watched The Who's performance from like the mid-2000s. Oh my God. I was like, wake up, wake up. You are performing on the Super Bowl. It could not have, that is a cure for narcolepsy. And excuse me, not narcolepsy. What is it when you can't sleep? Insomnia. My God. She, like, Gaga really does, she goes Gaga. She puts everything she has onto that stage. And I did live for the Keytar moment. I'm a Gem in the Hologram stan, and that was her living that fantasy. So I think I will vote for Beyonce just so that she's not getting shut out. But it sounds like we have a majority for Lady Gaga, which gives us a final two of Prince versus Lady Gaga, which I think is actually really pretty balanced. These two artists, I think, have a lot in common, and I suspect they would be the best of friends, honestly. Like, if Prince was still around, can you imagine him and Gaga sitting, like, smoking a cigarillo, cutting up, eating waffles? I think that, like, that's the buddy comedy I want to see. We're going to go around the horn. I'm going to start with Andrea. Is it Prince or Lady Gaga?
It is Prince, definitively.
Yeah. Jake.
Lady Gaga, aka Joanne, aka Joe Calderone. She is the best halftime performance of all time.
Gary.
Prince paved the way for Lady Gaga to play her guitar.
So are you voting for Prince?
Yes, I am Prince.
I am also voting for Prince here, Jake. I'm sorry. To me, Prince is everything we said about the Lady Gaga one, but it's also more laid back and assured and just effortlessly cool. This was a Prince concert that everybody in America was treated to for $0.00. And he played his heart out. And as much as we said the Katy Perry's halftime show was the pinnacle of her career, I'm not going to say that this was the pinnacle of Prince's career, because he's had many, many, many pinnacles. But boy, what a memorable chapter in his career this was. This was a legacy moment for sure. And I do think even today, and how long has it been since we lost Prince? Has it been like a decade now? It's terribly sad.
Yeah.
But this is something we still talk about it to this day. This show, it was a gift to everybody. And I think he meant it to be so, right? So I'm sorry, Jake. That means you're for Gaga, but I think the other three of us are for Prince. Can you live with that?
Begrudgingly. No, I completely understand. You know, Prince is, you know, is so iconic. And, you know, as much as I love Lady Gaga, you know, I don't think there would be a Lady Gaga without Prince. And he was a big inspiration for her. So, yeah, it's totally fair. And yeah, I get it. I'll live.
Thank you. Perfect. So there you have it. Our pick for the best Super Bowl halftime show is Prince from 2007. Do you agree? Do you think our balls are deflated? Tell us how you really feel by leaving a comment on this episode at greatpopculturedebate.com, or find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or Mastodon. While you're there, make sure that you subscribe and follow the podcast so you can hear about what new debates are coming soon, vote in open polls, and even decide which topics we tackle next. If you really enjoyed this episode, please take a minute to like and rate the episode or the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or whatever platform you listen to. I want to say thank you to my panel. I would not want to talk about the sports ball with anybody else. And thank you for listening. If you loved what you heard, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where you can get even more exclusive content and you get episodes a whole day early. We hope you have a good one. And remember, everyone is entitled to their wrong opinion. Did I do a touchdown? Did I get that right?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.